If you're hearing this, it means tickets are now on sale for our streaming Cybactacular.
That's what we're calling the streaming show of our Star Trek V review that we toured last year. We filmed our Hollywood show, and it's going to be streaming on Thursday, May 16th at 7 p.m. Eastern Time. And the stream will be available for a couple of weeks after that. If you can't watch right at the premiere time. A couple of pieces of information about this. If you support us at MaximumFun.org/join and your membership is current, check your email inbox because Maximum Fun will have emailed you a promo code to get $5 off your ticket. And also, we have some VIP packages available that include a meet and greet with me and Adam. Those are going fast, so jump on that if you want a meet and greet VIP package. Again, it's greatestgentour.com to get your tickets for the streaming Cybactacular.
My friends, the great experiment.
The greatest trick. Hidden. Trick.
Would you look at that?
The greatest trick.
Astronauts are some kind of Star Trek.
The greatest Trek.
Hello, and welcome to Greatest Trek. It's a new Star Trek podcast from the makers of The Greatest Generation. I'm Ben Harrison.
I'm Adam Pranica.
Not a Star Trek podcast today, my friend.
It feels like the furthest thing from it today, and I'm saying that as someone who has done Baywatch shows on our Greatest Trek feed, you know?
Baywatch is canonical Trek in a way that Space Precinct just isn't.
Yeah. Yeah. Space Precinct is more James Bond than it is Star Trek.
Yeah. If James Bond had a family.
How did you learn of its existence sufficient to make this a part of the pilot season project we're doing? And maybe we should reintroduce...
Yeah.
That as a concept.
Yeah, if you're just tuning in, we are killing time between now and the beginning of season 5 of Discovery by kind of going back in to the vault, watching some stuff that was airing contemporaneous with TNG and DS9 and Voyager, but, you know, was not Star Trek explicitly, but was, you know, of a similar sci-fi vibe. And I think I sort of did something that I used to do a lot when I would be working on our big list of war movies when we made the hit war movie podcast, Friendly Fire.
Yeah!
There were the ones I could think of off the top of my head, but I know that that is not the list. So
sure.
I was just searching, and like there's a million like clickbaity websites that are like, we rounded up the 7 worst sci-fi shows from 1995. And
uh-huh.
Here they are, you know, and like, you know, there's like a paragraph of snarky commentary and then, you know, an embarrassing screen grab. And I wasn't looking for bad when I was looking for this stuff. I was just looking for like, what even was there? So like the list that we have is way longer.
Mm-hmm.
There's way more shows on that list than we'll be able to get to in pilot season. But yeah, I found a bunch that I'd never heard of and I jogged my memory about a bunch of them. This was definitely of the never heard of this
mm-hmm.
genre, and I don't know how I missed it. I mean, 1994, I think it was an NBC show.
I didn't know this was on NBC. I thought this
was
only a, like, Channel 4 in the UK type of production, you know?
Maybe I'm wrong about that.
Like, you'd watch this show, and then you'd watch a show where people date each other based on only seeing their genitals or whatever.
Oh, you know what? You're right. It was a BBC show.
Yeah.
Man, I just assumed that it being on Peacock meant that it was made in and for the United States. But yeah, it's got an American cast.
Well, to you, the BBC is a network.
Yeah.
And I get that.
It's the network. It's one of the big three, anyways.
You have a special relationship to that network.
BBC, PBS, NHK.
Right. Yeah. The big three. The Holy Trinity.
Mm-hmm. Had you ever heard of this show prior to watching this pilot?
I am almost positive that this was a show that occasionally aired on the Sci-Fi Channel that would just be on some random afternoon. That as soon as my clicker would stop on it, would almost immediately, like, whatever the record is for, like, the neurons that travel from my eyeballs to my brain that recognize what a thing is or isn't, and then whatever energy flows to my thumb to then change the channel, that's the fastest transit time possible in my body. If I ever saw a frame of this show on Sci-Fi Channel when I was like 8,
wow,
to change the channel.
That is, I think, where 8-year-old Ben and 8-year-old Adam part ways. Because I think that seeing like this kind of puppetry and these kinds of miniature effects would have been all I needed to stick it out for as many episodes as they had in the block of Space Precinct episodes they're airing on Sunday afternoon on the Sci-Fi Channel.
Yeah, I mean, it's really got to hit a person in the right window, I think.
Yeah, yeah. There's so much that I like about this in terms of just like what kinds of production techniques they use and stuff. Like, I mean, I don't want to tilt my hand much, but it did sort of break my heart to see this much fit and finish go into this show.
No kidding.
Let's see. Many U.S. stations scheduled the show in late night time slots, which resulted in low ratings and contributed to its cancellation.
This seems like the sort of thing that would have aired after a late night infomercial, like that late.
Yeah.
Before your morning news that pops off at like 4 in the morning.
So Jerry Anderson, the guy who was behind this, is primarily famous for the super marionation technique, the like, you know, the Thunderbirds, like what Team America World Police was for some reason made to lampoon. And that kind of stands to reason. Like that's, you can see that DNA in the miniature work in this show.
You got your super marionation and then you got your regular Luigi. That's what you got.
Yeah.
Super Marionation 3 was my favorite, I would say.
I guess we'll see where this is on that continuum today, whether you consider it to be super marionation or you consider it to be regular Luigi.
Right. I'm glad you made that distinction, Ben, because like this, like any other pilot we're watching for this project, I would not, like, we're not shit watching any of this stuff.
No, I was genuinely curious about this.
Yeah. This is not a shit watch podcast.
I don't know if it's possible to get our hands on this, but this was based on a pilot that they made in 1986 called Space Police, starring Shane Rimmer.
Oh, is he a contemporary of Greg Inch or whatever, the director of that one Baywatch episode?
All Darwin know is Darwin a big fan.
Darwin's best performance come from Greg Inch.
Well, what do you say? Should we get into Gary Anderson's, there's the Jerry Anderson's Space Precinct 2040?
You know the greatest danger facing us is an irrational fear of the unknown.
Lieutenant Brogan and Officer Haldane, DCPD.
Backed up.
One thing I found really surprising and also not surprising about the director of this episode is I think you often want to throw the keys to your pilot to a great director.
Yeah.
A movie director, even. Because they're happy to do a pilot and then they'll go back to doing movies. They're not going to stick around. And John Glenn is the director of many James Bond films. Like, he's a guy. And I think you're in good hands if you give your pilot over to someone like that.
I mean, also just great to have an astronaut helming a...
Yeah, I mean, I don't think anything could surprise him in terms of the alien faces that he's seen in this episode.
We've talked about this a little bit already, the voiceover during the opening credits that kind of helps put us in a time and place. And I was...
Bring this back, Ben.
I think this is good.
How great would Strange New Worlds be if instead of the Star Trek Lord's Prayer that Anson Mount recites, it's like about the show and who he is and who his crew people are. And you get the, like, the little snippets of all the characters doing their work.
I'm Captain Christopher Pike. I guess you could say I'm a normal guy in an extraordinary time. That's my crew. The crew of the Starship Enterprise. Yeah, that would be amazing.
It's such an invitation to people, you know? It's great.
Yeah, roll out the red carpet. Invite people in.
Yeah.
we get to see like the, you know, the digital ID cards of all of our characters. We get to see a bunch of cool special effects shots of, you know, space planes and various explosions.
I got to tell you, Ben, if your name appears on screen with fireworks in the background, holy moly, that's a solid start right there for you.
Yeah, that means Gerry Anderson's got your back.
Yep. I love this. I love the disparity between, like, I don't know if this is era specific or not, but like the credits are very specifically a bunch of dudes holding guns doing dude stuff. And yeah, then their corresponding chicks giving their brave guys a bunch of like longing glances and doing domestic work or whatever.
Yeah, getting pulled in for sweet, sweet kisses, etc. Yeah.
Okay, sweetheart, I'll be in the kitchen if you need me.
I also, it took me a lot of this episode to get a sense of where it was set. I kind of, having heard the voiceover at the beginning of this, I was kind of expecting this guy to be like getting off the plane from New York City. Like the idea that he started as an NYPD cop, but now he's stationed here in Demeter City, sort of would give you the idea that they would like spend some time setting up what Demeter City is, where it is, like what humans have to do with it.
Not important at all. Yeah.
No.
I think you could get a season and a half on getting this fish out of water. As this episode begins, as this series begins, the fish is out of water.
Yeah, the fish is out of water. Like the most context we get is there's a little reel that says like this episode, protect and survive. And then it gives you a little preview of the episode you're about to watch in the episode.
Is this, remind me, I love Police Squad, the progenitor to the Naked Gun movies. That's something that Police Squad did, right?
I guess so, yeah. It definitely felt like very old-timey and yeah, specific.
Yeah.
So we can get kind of some panning shots of a city skyline. These are model miniature effects. And then we're in a car on some kind of stakeout. And there's a stoolie in the back of the car and a couple of cops in the front of the car. These cops, despite being this being a UK show, have American accents.
Then that looks like an American sausage in the dashboard, because this is a police cruiser that has not a replicator that makes any kind of food. This appears to be a hot dog dispenser that just makes hot dogs.
It's a hot dog machine.
It's got buttons colored to correspond to the topping. So the red button dispenses ketchup.
Ketchup.
And Haldane just can't get the ketchup to work.
More ketchup.
I programmed extra ketchup.
Yeah. You got red for ketchup. You got yellow for mustard. You got green for relish.
Uh-huh.
Push it to the limit, Mr. Sulu. I want full relish.
What the fuck is blue, Adam? That's some sci-fi shit.
Yeah. I mean, the mind reels at the possibilities there.
What does it do?
Turns blue.
How badly did you want Haldane to command this machine to give him full relish?
As much as I've ever wanted anything in my entire life. My wife and I always joke about like the Costco hot dog. Anytime we go to Costco, we'll get the hot dog. It's basically the main place where we eat hot dogs.
I always want to get the Costco hot dog, and my wife will never let me get the Costco hot dog.
Yeah, you're trapped in an abusive relationship. I understand.
Yeah, no kidding.
We always complain, though, about the staying power of eating a hot dog. It just stays with you. You stink of it.
Yeah.
For hours and hours. If you're on a stakeout and you're eating hot dogs during your stakeout, that's basically the worst stakeout food, right?
That car, like when they open the doors, like gives them away, right? Like even if it's not a marked police car, like the second you crack a window to smoke a cigarette or something, people are going to be like, oh, hot dog smell, 5-0.
This is my point. Like a ton of comedy hay is made throughout the episode of the differences between human customs or human hygiene or whatever and what the aliens perceive to be their own versions of those. And how could a hot dog not be just as disgusting to an alien person?
Inquiring minds want to know.
Yeah.
So their snitch. I don't know. This guy calls people Slick, so I guess that's what we'll call him.
Run Slick is an alias to the FBI. You're going to get the phone book. Do it anyway.
His name is Silk, though.
Oh, is it Silk?
It is.
Oh.
Silk Ostrowski.
Okay.
Is the informant that they've got in the back.
He's like assuring them that somebody's going to show up. And sure enough, some, get this, illegal aliens arrive.
Yeah. The vehicle drops off these Zyronites. I think it's really important to be specific about the alien names here. It feels like a lot of thought was given to who the people are named and the alien species names.
Yeah. And they report this in to Officer Castle, who's back at Precinct HQ. And the Zyronites kind of unload their rags and crates from the van that the coyote is driving. But he notices that the cops are there to stake him out. So he bugs out pretty quickly. And we get our first high-speed chase scene. And Silk is not psyched to be in the back of a car for this.
Silk can't be excited to be inside a vehicle where there may or may not be a malfunctioning condiment dispenser,
yeah,
because this crash landing is sufficient to jostle the ketchup out of the tube here.
I thought that they for sure were going to be like, oh no, did you get hit joke? Like, and Hal Dane would be like, no, it's just ketchup, you know?
I think this scene is so efficient in telling you everything you need to know about Hal Dane.
Ketchup.
Hal Dane is a goof. Hal Dane is not to be taken seriously. He's such a dork.
He's not the only, like, comic relief character in this police precinct, but he is one of the main ones.
He's got kind of a resting derp face that I don't think the actor has. I think he's doing this to his face.
Man, this guy, like, if he grew out the full cop mustache, would look so copish.
Yeah.
Like, yeah. His upper lip just looked nude to me, like embarrassing, like cover that up. You got to have a stash on that thing, Hal Dane.
Yeah, that's a cold upper lip.
Yeah. They crash, and like meanwhile, there's a shot back at HQ where Castle, the lovely desk jockey cop, talks to one of the other cops who is an alien with a third eye. She's referred to as Tuki, and reveal that this lady has some kind of telekinetic powers. She floats Castle's hat over to her using the power of her mind.
I love how jarring this is in the sequence, because the sequence is like, okay, the aliens get out. All right, we're ready to chase. Here's a crazy space chase. We got to report it back to HQ. And Jane's like, holy shit, the chase is on. We got to go. And Took is like, one moment. Let me show you street magic.
Yeah. The pace of the effect is very E.T. the extraterrestrial.
Yeah.
The cap floats across and the camera pans with it, and it takes a full 10 seconds from the cap getting picked up off the back of the chair that it's hanging on to landing on Castle's head.
Show off.
It's totally like hat on a fish hook being carried across the room from off screen. Instead of what it needs to be, which is like an ultimate frisbee flying across HQ and hitting Jane Castle in the head.
That would have been sick. But this is the Super Marionation people. Like, these are people that work with fishing line a lot and know how to hide it in a shot.
I'm proposing Luigi effects with a Super Marionation budget, aren't I?
After the crash, the chase is on foot, and our two main cop guys split up, and one of them is kind of going into like this alien abattoir where they're like sides of space beef hanging on chains in a in a cooler, and the other is kind of like out in an alleyway, and Silk surprises him and almost gets shot, you know, because Silk doesn't want to be stuck in the car.
Are these space beefs of the same type of species as the criminal they're chasing? Because there's that bit where the criminal like sticks his head on top of the severed neck of a space beef and totally blends in.
Yeah, it's like, oh wow, his loaf is made from the same kind of loaf they made this fake space beef from.
Yeah. kind of a dark image, really, the longer I think about it.
It's pretty gross.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I mean, it is implied later that Haldane's hot dogs are made out of whatever these creatures are.
Sure.
That's funny. You like eating it in Cruza.
Catch up.
They wind up getting in a gunfight with the guy that was smuggling the Zyronites into the city, and the coyote gets hit and goes down real hard.
RSVP, whatever that guy was.
Yeah.
Back at HQ, Jane Castle is running the interrogation of the two aliens that popped out of that car earlier.
Yeah, it's really good cop, telepath cop here.
It seems like Took is very sensitive to the fact that these aliens are thirsty. Like, her primary role is service.
Yeah. Did you get the sense that she got sick by trying to read their minds? Like, somehow the, like, telepathy was also a way of transmitting an illness?
I did get that sense, yeah. Or maybe this type of illness is mostly transmissible between aliens and less so between aliens and humans.
Maybe so, yeah. So she kind of goes down and doesn't look great.
I mean, how would you know, though?
Yeah, right, yeah. She's like a little green under the gills, but is that normal for her?
Yeah, I don't want to judge.
There does seem to be sort of like a main kind of alien guy in this precinct. Like, the boss and a couple of the other guys are of this type, and I don't know if we got an alien race name for them.
They're Kreons.
Kreons, okay. So they've got like big eyeballs that are like well to the side of their faces and like kind of like Jay Leno-y jawlines.
If you're not going to watch this, and I understand if you wouldn't, try to imagine Herbert the pervert from Family Guy, you know, the next door neighbor guy.
You like popsicles?
You know what his face looks like. Now imagine that, like, covered with gray loaf. That's what we got here.
These guys have a deep sea storyline about really wanting to get some tickets to the slam ball finals.
Yeah.
And there's one way to do it, which is win big at a video game, but they suck at video games. So what are they going to do?
Were you a little bit bumped by just the name slam ball in a universe in a show that tries so hard to name things completely inscrutably? Like, slam ball is so on the nose.
Yeah.
I was shocked by it.
I think that sports and illicit drugs are the two hardest sci-fi things to name. Like,
yeah.
If you're making up a sport, you're like, basketball, baseball are taken, you know, mm-hmm, football mm-hmm. taken.
Yeah.
Slam ball is like kind of the only direction you have to go.
Yeah.
And much the same way with drugs. Like you're never going to come up with something that sounds as evocative as fentanyl or heroin, you know?
Yeah. You're right.
Oh man, he's totally strung out on spice. Who cares?
Yeah, it doesn't work as well. I'm worried about Tookie, Ben. Yeah. She has been taken into what seems to be a medical facility attached to the precinct.
Yeah.
It's not a separate place at all. And it's not even like down the hall. It is connected through a door to this main precinct area.
Yeah, and like the precinct seems to be its own space station, and then the city is another space station.
Yeah.
But I don't know why you would build the precinct like in a different space station. Like, just build it in the city.
Yeah. Zyron fever is the diagnosis, and this chief seems to know enough about that diagnosis to be like, well, Took's got to be quarantined. This stuff is really contagious. And also, like, let's immunize everyone against it before everyone gets sick.
Our fear of immigration is actually well-grounded in the biological fact that the immigrants are bringing disease into our country.
Right. Yeah.
Which is interesting because this guy is obviously space Irish and, you know, like, his people probably dealt with some of this kind of horrible prejudice when they were fresh to the country.
This isn't the only issue Captain Podley is dealing with. When Brogan and Haldane return from their stakeout, Podley absolutely reams them for letting their courier die. And that's because Brogan didn't know that the armpit is where this flavor of alien kept their brains.
you know, different people keep their stuff in different places.
I know.
Isn't it about time you learned?
You would think that a space police person would have a general idea of like what a non-lethal use of force might be in this moment. Like, imagine you're Captain Podley. This is part of the dark episodes that we don't see, Ben, that you mentioned earlier that we really could use. Like, before the fish is out of water, Brogan has to learn how to shoot suspects. He doesn't know. They just turn him loose.
Yeah, this is like one of a million propaganda series that just like blows past some kind of like totally over the top police overreaction. Like, he literally killed somebody on the job today. Like, there's no, like, you got to like turn in your piece until you've been evaluated by a mental health professional. There's no like protest in the streets of Demeter City. Like, there's nothing.
Well, it's very specific to its own perspective, and we are on the perspective of Brogan,
yeah,
and Haldane.
Backed up.
And the space precinct specifically.
And Brogan, just checking in here, not shaken up about the fact that he has claimed a life today.
No, you get the sense that maybe that's why he was hired. Or maybe, like, he had some incidents back home and they kind of shuffled him to this new precinct and that's what's going on here.
Yeah, maybe it's Demeter City was the only city that would have him,
yeah,
kind of a thing. You know, like, that sort of bespeaks a dynamic that also isn't in this. Like, this is not the grizzled veteran cop and the rookie cop or the by-the-book cop and the cop that plays by his own rules, but he gets the job done. The gulf between Brogan and Haldane seems to primarily just be about who is silliest.
Yeah. They really are silly, silly, silly cops.
Yeah.
They just like eating hot dogs and having a good time.
Backed up.
Speaking of silliness, Silk, the rat, has been grabbed by Tyler Gershom, the big bad, the guy that's pulling all the strings, the person that is profiting from bringing diseased Zyronites to town. And they're in like a parking structure, and it's Tyler in the backseat and a very scary looking alien that might be the same species or a similar species to a lot of the other aliens in this show, but maybe not. Like, he's definitely got the same like structure under the loaf, like the wide eyes with the, you know, with the great big eyelids and the jawline.
I feel like a quad box apology is going to come at the next episode. I feel like this species would probably take great umbrage with how you're describing him.
Mm-hmm.
But in the dark, in the smoke, in the dark, it is kind of hard to tell.
Yeah, because Gershom's smoking a great big cigar and ashing it on Silk's head. Slick. It's Slick. It's not Silk. I'm looking at the subtitle now.
Oh, you make a big mistake for sure.
Oh, all right. I'm totally willing to be wrong. This is a scene that is meant to emphasize just how evil Tylan Gershom is. He is a bad man who doesn't care about you breathing clean air. What he cares primarily about is not leaving a living witness to his many crimes.
Drop of a hat, these guys will rock and roll.
His hench seems to enjoy the sort of jabs that he's given. I kind of admire this. Like, most henches will just do the dirty work of the boss without any joy, without any love for the craft.
Mm.
But this guy, he sticks something to the windshield of the vehicle that Slick is stuck in, and using a remote control, he's just having a blast, driving the car around while Slick is freaking out on the inside.
I mean, just imagine yourself having a remote control to a car in a parking structure, and like a full-size car you can drive around willy-nilly to your heart's content. Now add the element that you're an alien sociopath and you don't care that there's a guy that's tied up in that car whose life is at risk. In fact, that's only adding to the experience for you. Of course this would be fun.
If you're a boss, all you ever want is an employee who's motivated to do good work.
Yeah. And that's what Gershom has found in this hench. There's one little cut to this, like, blobby blue guy. You can't really see where he is, but it's clear that he has advantage of this during the sequence where Slick is killed. And then, like, when Slick finally does buy the farm, Gersim and his hench walk away, and it is revealed that this blue guy was sitting in a car that they were sitting on the hood of while they did this murder.
Kind of hard to miss.
So he saw the whole thing, and they seem to have been completely unaware.
Yeah.
Hey,
cheaters don't deserve nothing in Latinum.
Hi, this is Biz, and this is the final season of One Bad Mother, a comedy podcast about parenting. This is going to be a year of celebrating all that makes this podcast and this community magical.
I'm so glad that I found your podcast.
I just cannot thank you enough for just being the voice of reason as I'm trying to figure all of this out.
Thank you, and cheers to your incredible show and the vision you had to provide this space for all of us.
This is still a show about life after giving life. And yes, there will be swears. You can find us on MaximumFun.org. And as always, you are doing a great job.
All right, class. Tomorrow's exam will cover the science of cosmic rays, the morals of art forgery, and whether or not fish can drown. Any questions? Yes, you in the back. What is this?
It's the podcast Let's Learn Everything,
where we learn about science and a bit of everything else. My name's Tom. I study cognitive and computer science, but I'll also be your teacher for intermediate emojis.
My name's Caroline, and I did my master's in biodiversity conservation, and I'll be teaching you intro to things the British Museum stole.
My name's Ella. I did a PhD in stem cell biology, so obviously I'll be teaching you the history of fan fiction.
Class meets every other Thursday on Maximum Fun.
So do I still get credit for this?
No.
Obviously not.
No.
It's a podcast.
Would you like to know what Brogan's home life is like? That's what this scene is about. We're at the Brogan residence, which is shot and lit like a mid-90s network sitcom. It's incredible, like with all of its different layers and depths to the set. They really gave this a lot of thought.
They really did. Yeah, and it's very father knows best. Like the dad comes home and the mom tells him what the children have been up to.
Yeah.
And Brogan clearly is a little bit too focused on his job, like maybe not a great candidacy for fatherhood, given how much he wants to not be at home with his wife and family.
Didn't you feel like this show had a choice about whether or not to make Brogan dark or silly? Kind of for the purposes of giving a scene like this weight.
Yeah.
And by choosing silly, when Brogan tries to go dark here with a, like, you'll never understand what downtown is like. It's a bad place that I don't want Matt to be. Like, he's a little too silly to be issuing a warning like that. Like, but if he were totally dark, if it wasn't a hot dog in the cruiser, if it was just like two serious men doing serious police work,
yeah,
you know, watching Miriam crimes happen, when he comes home, you know, with the darkness with him, I think that would have hit a little better. But no, this is a silly show with silly people.
It's very silly. The dinner scene starts with everybody turning mom down on her Sempter squab. She's made space meat, and nobody really has an appetite for it, aside from Matt, who is kind of the hellion, the 14-year-old who, you know, is starting to explore rebelling against mom and dad a little bit. The innocent little sister starts cutting into her plate of peas and carrots, and the carrots are screaming. And it turns out that this is because her brother Matt got a little speaker at some like teen prank store downtown that he's hidden under her plate and is simulating the sounds of the carrots screaming out in anguish when she cuts into them.
Even in space, even in 2040, Spencer's Gifts Downtown has the hits, doesn't it?
Yeah, so good.
As much as the sister was deceived about her carrots being alive and screaming or not, I was deceived as a viewer in this scene by thinking that this little device would have any sort of importance later on in the episode for getting the bad guy. Because I feel like modern television would never suggest a device early on and then not pay it off later.
Yeah.
I was in agony the entire episode waiting for another screaming thing.
Absolutely Chekhov's whoopee cushion here.
Yeah.
And it does not pay off.
Nope.
So this, you know, this gets the whole thing up on its feet about Matt being sort of bad and wanting to go downtown and Dad disapproving of it.
Dad, I'm 14. I know what I'm doing.
You'll do what I tell you.
How bad do you want to know who Matt's friends are? Like, who's he going downtown with?
Yeah, does he have a bunch of, like, weird alien friends?
I've got to know.
Did he used to have, like, a promising future? Like, he won the science fair last year by growing radishes in weird dirt, but now he's kind of, like, changing.
And he smokes with cigarettes.
There's, like, a tension in the scene and in this family because, like, Matt seems interested in, like, being in the world. And it wouldn't surprise me at all if the mom and the sister triple locked the door after he left and, like, barricaded it for fear of whatever's on the other side.
I know. But, like, the thing that's sort of maddening about this is there are aliens and laser beams in this show. So you could see a very reasonable fear surrounding, like, leaving the house at all.
Sure.
Because aliens and laser beams.
Yeah.
But also, this is depicted as just, like, a dad that's got a bit of a racist streak and is like, I don't want you going around undesirable people by going downtown. Like, it comes across the wrong way, I think. Like, Sally is like, oh, you got to lay off him. Like, let him explore this new city we're in. And he's like, no, I know what it's like. And she's like, well, you only see the bad side because you're a cop, which is very reasonable. Like, cops do probably mostly see the tragic and upsetting parts of the places they patrol.
Yeah, it's like a doctor only seeing illness. I don't bring the racial connotation to that the way you do. I just feel like these are out of waters fishes. And in this brand new place, everything is scary. I understand that, but I never saw it as being motivated by alien species in any way.
Well, they don't get a ton of time to tie this conversation up because Brogan gets called back to work because they've brought this eyeball witness in.
I love how they have that conversation in front of the family, though. Like, Brogan's okay taking a work FaceTime, like, in full view of the dinner table.
Yeah.
It's great.
Like, Al Pacino in Heat has a very bright line boundary between work and home life. He does not describe what he was doing at work unless he's really pressed.
Hi, honey. Guess what?
He does not bring TV man who heard things mostly, like, home with him.
Yeah. He doesn't want to, like, process that heinous shit in his wife's ex-husband's dead tech postmodernistic bullshit house.
So the mission for Brogan is to keep this witness, Armand Loyster, alive. And they're going to need to bodyguard him, both he and Haldane.
Packed up.
Yeah. And Haldane is doing some target practice down in the shooting range with Castle. And boy, her head's just not in it. She's basically only landed two shots to the groin of this target that she's been trying to shoot. And the rest of them have gone wide.
Good enough for me. You're my man now.
I feel like that's because Tookie always, like, guides her projectile to the right place when they're together. Do you think she has any idea she's such a bad shot? This has got to come as a surprise.
Yeah. This is, like, the second time Haldane has kind of tried to put the moves on her. There's a real Sam and Diane energy between these two, if Diane wasn't interested at all.
You know what's funny about this that kind of informed how I felt about Haldane the rest of the episode is that according to what I read about his character, like the capsule, is he has a family and kids.
Oh, shit, really?
Yeah. I don't know if I read that by mistake or whatever, but like kind of makes me have feelings about Haldane's character.
Yeah, wow.
Seeing this go down.
Yeah.
Packed up.
He and Brogan head out to the Hotel Nirvana. And they check in on their guy, Loyster, that they're going to be looking after. I like the little scene where they transmit their ID through the, like, touchless contact thing on the doorbell.
I do, too.
Like, this show invented Apple Pay. Like, he uses the same thing to pay for his drink later at the vending machine.
I really love the magic trick this scene does. when they meet Armand Loyster and they're like, oh, this place stinks. And oh, this handshake is so wet. If you back the scene up, Armand Loyster is coming out of the bathroom.
Yeah.
Do not go in there. Woo!
So it's pretty clear to me that he just took a giant dump.
It's such a relief.
And he had time to wash his hands but not dry them.
Yeah.
That's all this is?
That's just blue soap on your hands. Brogan, come on.
Yeah. Yeah, these guys bring their own anti-blue guy sentiment.
Is that what the blue button is on the hot dog dispenser in their car?
Wow. Yeah, I think you solved it. You solved the case.
Oh, man. Castle visits Tookie in the hospital. There's no treatment for Xyron fever.
No.
We're going to just have to kind of wait this out. Hopefully she can recover.
We're just going to have to quarantine Took on the inside of a sneeze guard in a pizza buffet salad bar. I'm sure you understand. This is how medicine works in 2040.
No, please use the tongs if you're going to try to hold her hand, talk to her while she's in a coma.
She's not going to be doing any more hat tricks anytime soon. I love the doctor here. The doctor is so real when Castle asks if she's going to make it.
Yeah.
She's not sure.
With Xyron fever, who knows? All we can do is wait and hope.
Because they've got a witness, they are able to arrest Gersom. And they bring him down with his slimy defense attorney to the precinct. They get ready to lock him up. And the defense attorney saying all the stuff about, you know, I'm going to have all your jobs and this is going to be thrown out. You don't have a witness. And they're like, well, we do actually. And Gersom is smoking a cigar this whole time. And they're like, man, you got to put that out. This is if you claim to be a law abiding citizen, one thing you can't do is smoke that stogie. So he puts it out in a potted plant next to these two guys that are like trying to play the slam ball video game to get the slam ball tickets. And they've roped in the like medical robot that they have in the precinct to help them with this. So it's now, I guess, playing the game for them so that they can win.
Yeah, it makes sense. I have enjoyed like smoking a quarter of a cigar socially on occasion.
Mm-hmm.
I could rarely ever smoke an entire cigar.
An entire cigar is a lot.
And I could never, ever, ever think of like chain smoking cigars. Like Tylan Gershom does. Like, he's always smoking cigars.
He loves those shits.
Yeah. That's how you get a great voice, though. Like, anyone could hear my voice and hear not a smoker.
Hasn't enjoyed many stogies in his day.
Yeah. Yeah.
We cut back to the hotel, and we just have a little scene that is about establishing that Armand Loyster has a CGI tongue.
Pretty great.
There's a fly in the room.
I seem to attract them.
He's mine.
Actually, they're quite delicious.
Think of how great of a lover you would be if you had permanently lubricated hands and an enormously long tongue. Tell you what, I think you'd be allowed to get the hot dog at Costco.
Yeah. I mean, it's no wonder this guy has produced 4 children.
Yeah.
His wife can't wait to be in the bedroom with him.
Yeah. Yeah. Back at the precinct, we noticed that cigar that Tylan Gershom put out in that house plant, it has a listening device in it. And from inside his cell, he's been listening in on all the action out there.
Yeah. He knows that these two guys are desperate to get slam ball tickets, but it kind of seems like, what is the point of this at first? And
I asked myself that a lot.
But eventually, Castle comes back in. She's like, hey, like, our friend Tookie's doing hat tricks again. She's going to be okay. And also, specifically, the witness is at this specific hotel room at this specific hotel downtown. And they're like, good, yes, we all know that. Thank you for saying it out loud.
Tookie's doing hat tricks, but she's not hitting the bedpan.
So, Gershom requests to speak to his attorney, and it's pretty clear that he's just giving the location of the witness to him because the next scene is his henchmen and a couple more loafy alien killers getting ready to go do this hit and taking their marching orders from that slimy lawyer.
Armand seems pretty nice, right? He's either nice and forgiving of Brogan and Haldane.
Catch up.
Or he's oblivious to their sentiments, right? Because he's so, like, he's generous with his fried rodent room service meal.
Yeah.
Like, he wants to make this a good hang.
Yeah.
He's willing to play giant cards with them to pass the time. He doesn't have to do that.
He's doing this out of the kindness of his heart, too. Like, he wants to be back with his family. And he's like, I'll stick around and, like, have you guys defend my life against killers.
Yeah. You think I want to have this tongue in my mouth? It could be in my wife's ass. Doing a bit of good.
I love my family.
So Brogan is on the phone with his wife, and it's like a FaceTime call in a picture frame.
Mm-hmm.
And he does not hang up the phone, crucially.
Yeah, you got to do that.
We see that it's lingering with his end of the line, not closed, when the killers show up and they start kind of creeping around the hotel. And Brogan goes out to get something from the vending machine and bumps into the first of the killers. He's able to gun this one down and run back to the room and let him know that a hit job is afoot and they need to really, like, defend Loister now.
Clever hench, though. He got the one in the hallway, but he doesn't see the one coming in from the window.
That guy is so fast moving. Like, he comes in the window and has Loister as a hostage so quickly.
Yeah, he's great. Had me rooting for him.
Yeah. This guy is the same kind of alien as the police, right?
I think so.
Yeah. But there's a lot of guys with this kind of head construction in this show.
Guess who?
Speaking of head constructions, what you want to do is cut away from this scene of high suspense and to the Brogan residence where Matt has come home from a trip downtown to get his haircut.
Yeah, great haircut.
What Matt has decided on, like in pointing at the pictures on the wall, is sort of a butt cut in the literal sense. Like, the very back of his head has been split into two hair buns of different colors. I think red and black are the colors he's chosen.
It also seemed like maybe they put like a white stripe down the middle, or maybe that's just his very pale skin that's showing down the middle.
The most unbelievable part of this scene is that his sister does not absolutely clobber his nuts over this. Like, any sister worth her salt would ridicule him to death.
Yeah. Did you notice that they're wearing like name tags or something at home?
I did not notice that.
Do they not know each other's names?
I didn't notice that, no.
Because I think I first noticed it when the wife was on the phone because she's wearing a white shirt with the name tag. And I was like, oh, is she in like a lab coat? Is she a scientist or a doctor or something? But then the daughter's wearing the name tag.
Being new to the show, it was so hard for me to like cut to a scene in the Brogan residence and not think that it was people in like a pediatrician's office. Like, the lights are so bright. The colorful decorations are so colorful. It was intense. It always took me a beat to give myself that sense of place.
Yeah. I want to know what's up with the name tags that civilians are apparently required to wear around in this society.
Yeah. Maybe humans are the alien trash of the galaxy in this universe.
It's starting to seem like that might be the case. I mean, they're no Zyronites, but they're not desirable.
I mean, no.
The daughter wants to get on the phone with a friend of hers, and so she turns their TV screen back on. But the line is still connected to the hotel, so they get front row seats to the impending execution of their dad, his partner, and the guy they're supposed to be defending by this killer for hire. And fortunately, Matt thinks quick and shouts something, distracting the killer long enough for Brogan to get in there and wrestle the gun away from him and murder a man in front of his entire family.
Are you all right?
I'm fine, honey. I gotta go. I love you.
I kind of feel like Matt gets what he wants here. Like, by yelling out, he gets to be the hero of the moment, but he also gets to watch his dad do hero shit.
Yeah.
This is great for him.
There's only one killer left. It's the henchman that was working with Gershom before. And the cops and Loister take off under fire from this guy, and we get another high-speed police chase. They're getting hit, like he's shooting at them as they fly. They can only go 150 miles per hour because he damaged their car.
Were you also waiting for a hot dog dispenser cutaway as if to confirm my suspicion that maybe all police cruisers were equipped with them?
Or maybe,
was this the same cruiser they had before? I thought not, because they crashed that one, right?
Is Haldane not hungry? He's been in this hotel room for hours. He didn't go to the vending machines.
I know.
Catch up.
My mind was in the wrong place for this very exciting chase scene.
Yeah. Well, it is a very exciting chase scene, but like every other action sequence in this show, they keep cutting away from it to something not exciting going on, which is just the rigmarole of transporting the prisoner from the holding cells at the precinct to the world's tiniest courtroom, where they will bring him before a judge and have the charges read against him.
Didn't the bad guy from this episode, you said Tylan Gershom?
Yeah.
Didn't he remind you of the bad guy in Kindergarten Cop that looked like Val Kilmer but isn't?
Yeah.
He had that kind of vibe, like that kind of long dark hair, that real fuck you attitude.
He has a kind of villain quality of this era of television of like an accent I can't really place my finger on, but you can tell that the makers of this show are relying on that accent to make me not trust him.
Sure. Yeah. This hench, I guess, has a suitcase full of these devices that allows him to control other vehicles, right? So while this police chase is happening concurrently with the lawyer escorting the bad guy into the courtroom and the judge administering his orders or whatever, like, the hench has now got control of Brogan and Haldane's vehicle.
But Armand has that CG tongue.
Yeah.
And so he like leans his huge blue head out of the car and is like trying to frog tongue that thing off of the vehicle. And it takes him a few tries, but he gets it. But the strain of doing that seems to have caused some kind of cardiac malfunction.
Which has got to be unusual, right? Like he's usually got some staying power with that tongue.
Yeah.
Until he hits the right spot.
Sure does. The device flies through the air and amazingly lands back on the car of the bad guy and like 9-11s him into a tower. And meanwhile, they're like trying desperately to provide life-saving CPR to Loister, who is really suffering in the back seat. And over in the courtroom, the judge is like starting to get ready to just dismiss all the charges against Gershom because they don't have a witness there to provide any testimony that Gershom did anything.
The way that the aid for Armand Loister is shot, like the way that it's blocked, and especially what Haldane says, suggests that Brogan is going in for the breath of life, right?
Yeah, but they don't show it. And I feel like they can't show it because the loaf wouldn't react well. Like,
yeah.
These are really impressive, like super intricate puppet faces on some of these aliens, but
you'd probably die immediately if any part of that loaf was put in your mouth. Like it's made of adhesives that are long illegal to use in a workplace.
These are hydrocarbon chains that send shivers up the spines of most chemists.
Yeah. Yeah.
So yeah, it's looking like Gershom's going to get let free because of what's going on. And then Castle runs in at the last minute and they're like, the witness is in like a medical emergency, but he can FaceTime in. And the judge is like, I'll allow it. And they FaceTime him in and he points right at Gershom. Justice has been done.
Really great composition with that giant finger, like the perspective of like giant finger hand pointing in the courtroom in the foreground.
He did it. He did it. He killed that poor human.
Great stuff.
It's so good. And Gershom is so mad that he punches out his fucking defense attorney.
Yeah. Amazing. You gotta love this. Everyone hates lawyers, right?
Fuck them.
Punch that lawyer.
Hey, my wife's a lawyer.
She's a very good lawyer.
Everything has gone so well that Castle has got her her mojo back down at the shooting range. She and Haldane have another matchup, and she's able to bullseye the crotch on her target with every shot she takes.
Does it hurt?
You're going to feel a little pinch.
And he is not picking up on the implications of this at all.
Haldane suggests an opportunity for himself to bullseye that crotch. And Castle is like, no, not this time anyway.
Yeah.
And the way her eyes sort of twinkle at him at the end of the scene kind of makes you think that some other time is going to happen.
Yeah, he's like, so you're saying there's a chance?
Yeah.
Catch up.
The captain kind of browbeats those other guys out of their tickets to the slam ball that they won via getting a robot to do the video game for them.
Mm-hmm.
And they can't really say anything because they've done all of this fucking around at work under the cover of pretending to be doing some kind of investigation on computer fraud.
Right.
Which the captain sees right through. And, hey, we can tell that everything's going to be okay back at the Brogan household because the last shot of the episode is a sleeping Matt and Lieutenant Brogan dropping off the tickets to the slam ball finals on his bedside table and then getting a nice react to seeing what the back of his son's head looks like right now.
His wife looks at this scene, you know, with some compassion. Now, it wasn't that long ago that kind of didn't seem like they'd have a future, the Brogans as yeah. parents. But it's pretty clear that Patrick's about to find out whether Matt is the only Brogan who has a new hairstyle. Because it looks like they're on the way to the bedroom when we fade to black at the end of the pilot episode of Space Precinct, Ben.
Did you like this episode, Adam?
She'll always bring it home.
I did. Like, I came out of the blocks thinking of my younger self and what he might think of a show like this. And I was a sci-fi snob when I was younger. Like, I totally channel surfed past shows that looked like this. But giving this one the adult chance that it deserves, I could see a lot of comfort to be felt by watching a show like this between the 3 and the 4 a.m. hour, you know, trying to remain awake through a hangover, you know,
yeah.
to get to the other side of it. Like, this really feels like after the party, and maybe you don't want to clean up and you're just like going to sleep on your own couch, like that kind of programming, you know? This sort of programming where too many cooks would come on TV.
Right.
This isn't the first try for the combination of science fiction and space procedural. Like, this was a micro genre inside those two genres. And kind of works. I think these are two tastes that taste pretty good together. Maybe not in this specific instance. Like, I think it would take watching the rest of the series to really be able to say whether or not the show is good, but this one episode was interesting enough to keep me entertained.
So you would take this to series. If you're an executive and they bring this in and put it up on the screen in your office, are you ordering the 24 episode first season?
I mean, based on nothing else but the fact that the Thunderbirds guy and the James Bond director are getting together for a science fiction and space procedural show. Yeah, I think you have to do it.
Wow.
But I think you do it blind. Like, I think if you're reading first, that probably doesn't happen.
Yeah.
Because the amount of screen time that hot dog gets is enough to get a SAG card. Like, there are some weird visual choices in this episode that feel like they're like for fun, to make it fun and to not make it serious.
Yeah.
So if you're trying to take this seriously, I think you're doing it wrong.
I agree with that. I think that the fun sort of didn't work for me as much as it did for you. Like, you know, we have that great car chase at the beginning, and then it's the sneaking around in the meat freezer with the sides of space beef. And suddenly like the music had downshifted. And I was like, this went from like very exciting and cool looking to something I've seen a million times before and like not well executed version of that. And I think that I honestly felt more frustrated by this pilot than I did intrigued. Like, I wanted to like this so much because I love weird puppet stuff. I love Loaf that has little servos in it and like the eyes are being operated by puppeteers off screen. I love miniatures.
Did you like Dinosaurs?
Oh, yeah.
The TGIF show?
Yeah.
Okay.
I thought that was great. And like, stuff like that is just so appealing to me. And like the one CG effect in this entire thing being a tongue. And it's not even a CG effect every time you see it. Because like when we're going to the close-up of the device on the hood of their car, it's like a piece of rubber that they're whacking that light with.
It's another fishhook effect.
Yeah. And like I'm super here for all of that shit.
I'm here for tongue stuff too.
When Strange New Worlds started having tons of puppet stuff in season one, I've never been more excited about a Star Trek move in my entire life. And I really want to be super on the side of this show. But boy, I just hated the two main characters so much. I fucking hate these guys. I don't like them. I don't know that the show quite makes an interesting enough case for like, there's nothing about any of these aliens that couldn't just be people, you know? Like, one of the aliens has telekinesis, but she's off the show after the first 15 minutes, and the telekinesis is used for one party trick, and then it's, like, irrelevant. And I feel like they sort of missed an opportunity with this pilot writing something about, like, what about the fact that all of these aliens of different species work at this city makes this different from other police procedurals. And
I mean, you're describing the Deanna Troi problem,
right?
Also, like, it took six seasons before she got a little bit out of the pot.
Totally. Yeah. And so I think it just kind of bugged me, and I couldn't get out from under that watching this. So I don't think I order it to series, but I loved looking at it. I'll tell you that. It's so fucking weird looking, this show.
Yeah. Yeah. Very unusual. Very glad I watched it this one time.
You want to see if there's anything weird in the priority one inbox?
Oh, yeah. I'm pointing my tongue over there right now, Ben.
Just don't get anything, any blue goo on it.
Priority one message from Starfleet coming in on secured channel.
Adam, this first P1 is from David, formerly of Nashville, now a Florida man. And it's to Ben and Adam. Goes like this. Hey, guys, throwing y'all some scarves for the down season between Lower Decks and Disco. Ben, get Daron a onesie or something. Adam, do whatever you like. Happy holidays, and thanks for all you do, and bring the tour to Florida. Boy.
Love to, man. Maybe in a couple years.
Yeah. Every time we've looked at Florida, it's just been like, I don't know where we could sell enough tickets to not lose our shirts on a trip to Florida.
I really love David's sentiment about throwing scarves during the off-season. That's really appreciated. Ben, I want to ask you a question, though. Are you starting to feel some resentment toward, like, people doing nice things for you just because you have a kid? Or, like, here, I'm going to give you a nice thing to give to your kid, but not to you?
No.
I definitely appreciate David from Nashville and now Florida man, their sentiment about this. They said, for me to do whatever I like, I want you to do whatever you like.
I know, but what if what I like is doing nice things for the baby?
I'll never understand that, I guess. I'm just curious.
Yeah, that's where I'm at as a man.
Ben, our second priority win message is from Andrew. It's to you and me. That message goes like this. Don't go to Norfolk, Virginia. Go to Milwaukee, near a major holiday, or come to Tokyo.
Whoa.
Also, never regret your choices. Love that you're making thousands of FODs happy around the world. Thanks for making great pod, keeping my long commutes entertaining.
Wow.
Andrew seems to be referring to something specific.
Yeah.
But I'm not sure what.
I think somebody was trying to persuade us to go to Norfolk in maybe a previous P1.
Some people call it Norfolk.
Norfolk, yeah. And looks like Andrew is raging against that idea.
I might be going to Tokyo this year.
Wow.
Me and my wife are conspiring for a return to Japan.
That sounds great.
Can't wait.
Enjoy it if you do. And let our friend and agent know to book us a show while you're there so I can tag along.
Do my best.
Sure, your wife would be thrilled if that happened.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, we'll see what we can do about a trip to Tokyo.
We're doing nothing but going to Costco's in Japan and eating all the hot dogs there, Ben. I don't know if you'd be allowed to come.
Yeah, I mean, not only do I hate Costco, but I wouldn't even be able to eat when I was there, so... if you'd like to get a Priority One message on the show, you know, it helps keep the lights on around here, helps keep Adam and Costco hot dogs.
Oishi.
$100 for a personal message and $200 for a commercial message. It's MaximumFun.org/Jumbotron to set yours up today.
Hey, Ben.
What's that, Adam?
Did you find yourself an Edward Larkin?
Edward Larkin! I think I'm going to give it to that robot guy that's going around. Seems to be like not quite a sentient robot, although it does have a badge. Like it has a police badge, which makes me think it's like a full-fledged officer on the force.
Doesn't this robot seem dumb though? You never see depictions of like, I'm gonna take that back. You only see depictions of dumb robots in Star Wars, right? Like Star Wars really leans into a dumb robot.
Yeah.
But like in most other sci-fi, the robots are the smartest ones in any room.
Right. There's always been that uncomfortable thing about the robots in Star Wars that it's like, are they property or do they like have internal lives and feelings and shit? And
yeah.
If they're both, what the fuck, Star Wars? And this robot doesn't quite give you the sense that it like has an internal life, but it does rule at video games and have some medical capabilities because it comes into the room when Took is fallen over.
You need this robot to be there because you never watch Slam Ball happen. You just see reactions to Slam Ball.
Yeah, they don't simulate the video game that they're playing or anything.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
Yeah, I think that robot has got to be my Edward Larkin in this episode.
Yeah.
How about you?
I mean, for me, it's Armand Loyster. He takes great big hotel dumps. He has a super long sex tongue. He seems really nice and heroic. I don't know. He checks a lot of boxes for me.
Outstanding.
Yeah.
He takes a lot of shit from the people there to protect him. I didn't like that about Brogan and Haldane.
Back up.
That's the only unlikable part about Brogan and Haldane to me. I just think they should have been nicer to Armand Loyster. So he's going to be my Edward Larkin for that reason.
Okay. Well, this has been a ton of fun. Do you want to talk about what we're going to be watching next here on Pilot Season?
After this experience, I'm going to be shocked no matter what you say is our next episode. I have no idea what direction we're going after this.
Well, we're going to be spending some time with a beloved Star Trek actor on our next episode.
It's Sato!
It's another long one. This one is a two-part pilot episode. Came out in 1995, available on Peacock and the Roku app, I guess. It is Sliders, starring Jerry O'Connell and created by Tracy Torme.
How about that?
I'm pretty excited about this.
You got John Rhys-Davies in this.
Yeah, I think he's like in the main cast.
Wow.
This was a show that seemed to be on like 7 different channels at the same time during my childhood. Like I could never really figure out whether Sliders was like a cable show or a network show or like which network. And it seems to have lasted like forever and ever. So I think there's a pretty big fan base for this one, but I don't know much about it. I think they like go into different dimensions or something.
I never watched a single episode of this when it was on TV, but this was like Quantum Leap, except you get to keep your body, right?
Yeah, I think so. And like, maybe this is Stargate and I'm wrong, but doesn't Sliders like go, it's like a, like what if the Egyptian Empire like persisted past ancient Egypt and like, it's modern society, but everything is Egyptian Empire skinned or something.
And that's one episode or that's...
Yeah, yeah.
Like, that's every episode.
That'll be like a kind of place they visit or like it's...
I like that.
Yeah. So I don't know what they do in the pilot, but we'll find out next week here on Greatest Trek.
I just love the idea of John Rhys-Davies yelling at the main character in whatever program he's in.
Yeah. I wonder if Jerry O'Connell's character is as horny in this as it is in Lower Decks.
I wonder if he's as shredded as he is in Lower Decks.
Oh, yeah. Does he rip his shirt off with one fist to the chest?
Excited to find out. 1995.
Yeah.
That's when Sliders premiered. How about that?
Yeah. Last segment on every episode of this show is the Warning Boys segment, where we shout out a social media thing that made us laugh.
Prepare a buoy and launch it when ready.
Warning buoys.
An emergency buoy.
A warning buoy.
So somebody, I think from the Discord, Gulliver Skidmore, took a suggestion that you and the Goose and I riffed up on our interview of Adam Ragusea episode, which is if Yakety Sax played when the D came out of space dock at the end of Star Trek Picard season 3, it would have been just as majestic.
Yeah.
And they actually layered in the Yakety Sax music, like, and you can hear people talking over it and everything. It's really well done.
Yeah. Yeah, that seemed difficult to do.
Yeah, I highly recommend you get over on the Drunk Shimoda Discord if you're not, and especially for pilot season, because that seems like the place to be hanging, watching these things.
I wish enough footage existed where as soon as Yakety Sax started, like, different doors of the starbase opened and the D would come out and then go back in and then out the top and then out the bottom. And
oh, yeah.
They're looking for the D, but they can't find it.
Like, how could it have come out there when it went in there?
Yeah. Pretty great regardless.
The saucer separates to simulate the top coming off.
Yeah. Yep. Gets you every time.
Anyways. Thank you, Gulliver, for posting that to the Discord. Not that, like, posting anything to the Discord really qualifies for a warning, but it just seemed like that took a lot of work and was really great.
Yeah, that's by an FOD for an audience of just FODs.
Yeah, that's not going to get us any new listeners. Fuck! I completely fucked up the segment!
Yeah, if you want to get into the Discord, you know how to do that? Go to drunkshimoda.com. Then you're seeing memes all over the place.
Yeah, and be cool. But post something about the show online or leave a nice review on Apple Podcasts, and you might hear us mention it on the Warning Buzz segment. We really appreciate it.
Yeah, thanks, Gulliver Skidmore.
All right.
Keeping it light over there.
We'll be back next week with the pilot of Sliders. I'm really looking forward to it. And I think we'll leave the rest of the episode in Wendy's capable hands.
Sure will.
Bye-bye.
Greatest Trek is an Uxbridge Shimoda podcast on the Maximum Fun Network. It's hosted by Ben Harrison and Adam Pranica, and it's produced and edited by Wendy Pretty. You heard the guys. Next week on the show, we're covering the 90-minute premiere of Sliders, entitled Pilot. And if you'd like to join other FODs in a watch party, you can do that aboard the USS Hood Discord at drunkshimoda.com. Thanks to Adam Ragusea, who composed the theme music for Greatest Trek. You can find his YouTube cooking channel and podcast by searching for Adam Ragusea. Thanks to Nick Ditmore for creating the show art, and thanks to Bill Tilley for managing all of the at Greatest Trek social media pages. You can find and follow those online. Also, use the hashtag Greatest Trek when you post about the show. And thanks to the Max Fund members who contribute directly each month. Membership dollars make this show possible, and we really appreciate everyone who gives at MaximumFun.org/join. You can also help out by leaving a 5-star rating or by recommending the podcast to someone you know who might enjoy it. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next week on Greatest Trek.
Maximum Fun,
a worker-owned network
of artist-owned shows,
supported
directly
by you.